Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm here with Paul McCrone. He's Professor of Health Economics at the Institute for Life Course Development at the University of Greenwich. And Paul's just given a really interesting talk on health economics in relation to mind, state, society. You said in your talk, Paul, that while hospital care is expensive, community mental health services are not necessarily the cheap option. So what were the economic arguments for closing down the old mental health asylums in the first place?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, a lot of people would take the view that one of the main reasons for closing the hospitals was to save money. And they felt that the hospitals were expensive and community services would be much cheaper. But there was many policy documents around the time of the closure programme and in the subsequent years, which really indicated that good quality care in the community would cost a lot of money, would be not less, maybe cheaper than hospital-based care, but would require lots of investment and high staff-to-patient ratios, things like that. So it was some were seeing it as a cheap option, and maybe policymakers wanted it to save lots of money, but there were lots of people who realised that that may not be the case, that to get good quality care would still cost money.
So is it that simple that we thought we would save money, we wouldn't ever save money, and now we haven't spent enough money, and that's why we're in the state we're in?
I think it's gone in phases, really. I think that there was investment in community services when the hospitals were being closed. One of the big problems was the transfer of funds between agencies probably created lots of confusion and disincentives to develop services. So there's a move away from the responsibility being with the health authorities towards local authorities. But local authorities, certainly in the early 1980s, were under lots of financial pressure. There was the sort of infamous rate capping that was prevalent at the time. So local authorities weren't allowed to increase rates by a substantial amount. There was sanctions against them if they did that. So that would have acted as a disincentive to develop services. We also had, at the time, in the 70s, certainly joint finance between local authorities and health authorities, but that was a very small amount of money in proportion to the total amount of NHS and care spending. But it did enable some initiatives to develop, but also may have acted again as a disincentive for other funds to be transferred from health authorities to local authorities.
You've spent many years doing economic evaluations in mental health. What's the rationale behind that work?
The main rationale for me being involved in it is a recognition that in order to generate good quality evidence, we need to think about the economic side of things as well, which doesn't mean that we need to focus on what's cheaper. It means looking at the relationship between how much a service costs and what the outcomes are from it. So it could be that we have a service that is actually cost effective, even though it costs more money, because you get sufficiently improved outcomes. The need for doing this, the rationale for doing it, is mainly that we're unfortunately faced with a situation where we have scarce resources, and even if we increase health spending substantially, we're still going to have a finite amount of resources available to us, and yet the demand to use those resources is fairly unlimited. So we always have to make decisions about what is the best way to use our funds. Do we spend it on mental health or on other areas? And so really that's the rationale for conducting economic evaluations.
And we've heard a lot today about this process of deinstitutionalisation that we've had over the last number of decades, and the impact that that's had on numbers of inpatient beds in mental health. So somebody tweeted earlier that we have as many inpatient beds now as we had in 1865. I'm not sure of the kind of reliability of those figures, but what do we know about the economics of deinstitutionalisation?
The biggest study that included an economic component was the TAP study that was led by Julian Leff. And the economic component was led by Martin Knapp and Jenny Beecham from the University of Kent at the time. And they compared hospital-based care in the Frean and Claybury hospitals in North London with care that was provided in the community for cohorts of patients who were discharged over time. And they found that those patients who were discharged early on were, not surprisingly, the easiest ones to discharge, and the costs were relatively modest for those in the community. But as further cohorts were discharged, the costs per week increased, and actually over time the costs of care in the community were pretty much the same as the costs in hospital. There was very little difference, mainly because to do a valid comparison you've got to look at all the components of hospital-based care, which would include all the hotel costs, i.e. heating, lighting, food, things like that, which people would have in their own homes or in residential care homes as well. So if we take a very comprehensive approach, then we're getting costs that are fairly comparable between community-based services and hospital-based services. So costs weren't really saved, but that doesn't mean that's not necessarily a bad thing. If costs had gone up, that may have been a very good thing, actually, because it may mean that more care is provided. So again, we go back to this issue about low cost doesn't mean it's that's not necessarily a good outcome. So it's probably a good thing that the costs were not much lower.
When I was tweeting your talk, we had quite a few responses from mental health service users, from OTs, from nurses who were saying, we're measuring the wrong things here. What's your view about how we measure, for example, inpatient bed days versus qualies in this sort of area? How do you think we need to organise future research if we're actually looking at what we need?
I think there's issues around both of those outcome measures that you mentioned. Many evaluations have used admissions or inpatient days as the main outcome measure, which I've always had concerns with, because at the end of the day, an inpatient day, if somebody is admitted to hospital, then it's appropriate that they are in hospital and they receive very good quality care, then the cost per inpatient is just reflecting the care provided. It may be, of course, that we want to avoid situations where people have to be admitted. It's good that if we can avoid that, but having that as a outcome in itself seems problematic to me, because it is a proxy measure for care that's provided in one particular setting. With the qualies, I think there's an issue there. I think that's, in essence, in theory, qualies are very good because they allow us to make comparisons across many different clinical areas, and NICE favour the use of qualies in their assessments. But for a measure to be equally relevant in every clinical area, it's going to have to be equally sensitive for every area as well. And the quality measures we have at the moment, we do use them in mental health care research, but there are concerns that they may not be as sensitive as they are in other clinical areas.
What you're taking away from today as a health economist that's come and listened to psychiatrists and historians, and later on this afternoon some service users and carer reps, what do you think you're going to be taking back and feeding back into your work?
I think it's the need to step outside the box. I mean, I always feel that as an economist coming to meetings like this, it's to hear historians talk about the deinstitutionalisation process, to hear psychiatrists talk about it, and you know, later on to hear about those with lived experience talking about it. You're forced to move outside of your discipline, which is really good, and to think about things in a different way. And that benefits the way that you then do things within your discipline, I find. So, you know, I think my issues around the use of qualies, for example, and I do use them, so I put my hand up, I do use them, but I do have concerns about them. And that's a lot that's largely come from the close working relationships I have with people from other disciplines and people who've used services as well.
Thanks a lot for talking to me.
Thank you very much.